Good morning, I'm Ben Stanton, and I'm really happy that this morning we will be talking with William Sleater. Mr. Sleater is an author of young adult science fiction novels, including such favorites as Interstellar Pig and House of Stairs. Mr. Sleater has been on the road promoting his new book, The Last Universe, and he joins us at Radio Disney AM 1580 Studios in Phoenix. You've been living in Thailand. What brings you to Arizona?
My publisher brings me here because I have a book that just came out and they're pushing it and they want me to go around and help sell copies, and it's worth it.
What is your most recent book?
The most recent book, the one that this tour is supposed to be about, is called The Last Universe, and it was my attempt to take quantum mechanics and turn it into a science fiction novel for 10 to 14-year-olds. There's a guy named Richard Feynman that won the Nobel Prize, and he said once that people say nobody understands relativity. He said that's not true. Many people understand relativity, but nobody understands quantum mechanics. So that was my challenge, to get 10 to 14-year-olds to understand it.
Well, so what got you interested in quantum mechanics?
The kind of books that I like to write are when I take real science and apply it to the real world. The characters all have their own regular problems. That's what one of the things that makes it interesting to kids, you know, sibling problems, parent problems, and so on. And then into their life comes this weird scientific event that I kind of modify the science a little bit, stretch it a little bit. So this book, I take quantum mechanics and make this garden. They have this huge garden, and I make it into a quantum garden. It starts to behave very weirdly.
I'd like to talk about your teen years. Your book, Oddballs, is autobiographical. Is there a story you'd like to share?
Once when my sister and I were teenagers, the family went on a vacation to Florida. And as teenagers, we weren't really interested in going on a vacation with our parents. And we had two little brothers who were 9 and 11 years younger than us. All we cared about was our friends at home. So one day we snuck down to this big hotel in Miami Beach, and my sister and I, and made all these long, long-distance phone calls to our friends back at home, and we charged the phone calls to our parents' hotel bill. And while we were doing that, we smoked cigarettes. And then we turned around, and there were our two little brothers, ages 5 and 7, who we had been torturing, and they had been secretly watching and listening the whole time. So the 7-year-old one said, "All right, it's up to you. Either we will tell Mommy and Daddy about the phone calls, or we'll tell them that you were smoking. You get to decide which." So obviously, which one did we want them to tell? That we wanted to tell them about the phone calls, because the phone calls were going to show up on their hotel bill anyway. There was no way to prevent that from happening. And we also knew that smoking was the worst thing in the world. So we said, okay, tell them about the phone calls. Don't tell them we were smoking. And they promised that's what they would do. We go back to the room. The 7-year-old runs in. He says, "Mommy and Daddy, Billy and Vicky made all these long-distance phone calls." And the 5-year-old said, "And they didn't smoke at all." So that's the kind of story I try to work into this book. It's quite different from my other books.
I'm thinking actually in particular of Parasite Pig, where one of the characters is shelving books at the Harvard Library. And I know you went to Harvard. I was wondering if that might have been really you in disguise.
Well, I think he's a lot more courageous than I would have been, but I wanted him to have a job, and I wanted it to be a job that I knew about. Once again, this was an attempt to get something very realistic into a science fiction story, and I did shelve books, and it's eerie. The Harvard Widener Library has 10 underground floors of stacks, so it was a good job to write about, because you're in this weird, and they wanted you to turn the lights on and off as you were shelving books so that they wouldn't waste electricity, the richest university in the world. And the first parasite alien disguised as a person approaches him in the darkness of this underground, the underground stacks. So, you know, I don't actually write about myself, but I take aspects, different aspects of my life and put them into the books. I have other, the book I'm writing right now, which is about that character also has a job, which I had, which was serving food in the to the undergraduate cafeteria. And the worst part was that there was this 50-gallon milk machine. And when it ran out, you had to take out the empty cylinder, and then you had to put in a 50-gallon cylinder of milk. And I was always terrified it would spill. And once, it in fact did.
Oh no!
50 gallons of milk. And the boss was a very tough woman, and I didn't get fired, but I was terrified that was going to happen again. So, you know, I like to take things like that from my life and use them once again for realism.
Do you just rely on your own memory of your childhood and teen years to, as far as using those kind of things in your books?
One of the things I talk to kids at schools, I tell them that I have had a journal since I was 13 years old. Pivotal moments in my life are in that journal, and I can read about them. And I still have a journal, and so that's why I remember. In a way, I don't even have to look at it, because just writing something down kind of freezes it in your memory. So I remember what it was like to have all these jobs, because I was keeping a journal about them at the time. So the journal is very important in terms of getting realistic stuff into the books.
So you say you still keep a journal now?
Yes, I will go home back to the hotel tonight, and I'll write about this interview in the journal.
So what else do you include in your journal entries?
I'll write about the schools. I'll write about the interview. Everything is in that journal, everything that happens in my life. It's extremely boring. I mean, it's thousands of pages long.
I want to talk a little bit about how you actually got into writing. I understand you originally were you going to school for music, or were you just an avid musician?
I was an avid musician, and I wanted to major in music at Harvard. I ended up not majoring in music because I did this really peculiar thing. I was taking a course given by the head of the music department, and it was right after lunch. And I would sit in the front row, stretch out my legs, and fall asleep. I don't know why I didn't do this in the back row, but I did it in the front row. And this guy liked to pace, and he had to pace over my outstretched legs while I was lying there asleep while he was speaking. So they suggested that I not major in music. So I ended up majoring in English. But I never really considered music as being a career. It helped me playing the piano for being a rehearsal pianist for a ballet company. Helped me get through the first years of writing books. I was doing that for 9 years before I was making enough money from my writing to be able to quit that job. It was good to be able to play the piano well enough to earn that money while I was starting out as a writer.
Do you still play?
Unfortunately, I don't have a keyboard in Thailand, and for that reason, I've sort of stopped. And it's like anything else. When you stop doing it, it starts to deteriorate, and I'm nowhere near as good as I used to be at the piano, which is too bad, because the great thing about the piano is that you can entertain yourself for hours all by yourself. You don't need another instrument. You don't need a band or a group to play with. You can just sit there and play all sorts of wonderful music on your own, and it's a great way. It makes you feel good. It just makes you feel good, and I've stopped doing that. I've sworn that I've got to start practicing again and get back to that.
I want to talk a little bit about the writing process. Well, your writing process. Some of the subjects for your books are very intriguing. And I wonder, maybe for example, we can look at House of Stairs, a book about five teenagers locked in a very strange environment with stairs swirling all about. And these stairs lead to nothing but a strange machine, which they learn will give them food, which they are without otherwise. Where did this idea come from?
There were several things that went into it. First of all, I had a fellowship at a place called the Bread Loaf Writers Conference. And what this consists of is all these people who... I had written one published book, so I got a fellowship there. Then there are a lot of people that hadn't written anything but wanted to be writers. And then there was the staff, the teachers, who were pretty well-known writers. And all these people are stuck on top of this mountain in Vermont for 2 weeks and completely isolated from the real world. It's what I call a ship of fools situation. And when you're in that situation, you behave differently because you know you're never going to see these people again in your life. So sort of inhibitions disappear. So I thought I'd take two teenagers and put them in a situation like that. And then there's a picture. I like M.C. Escher. He did a picture of this called House of Stairs, which just shows all these creatures, an endless place of stairs. So I said, okay, I'll put these teenagers in a place like that. Okay, why are they there? So I read a book by B.F. Skinner called Science and Human Behavior about how he used conditioning to train rats and pigeons. And a lot of things, one of the things that people misunderstand about Skinner is that he did not use punishment. Punishment is very ineffective. Aside from being, you know, immoral, it just doesn't work very well because it creates unpleasant emotions. The way that he worked with his experimental animals was to reward them. And it was amazing how he could train them to do these complex things simply by rewarding them with food on very specific reinforcement schedules. So I read this book and I use these real schedules in the book. So anybody that reads House of Stairs, whether they realize it or not, is going to learn about reinforcement. And one of the interesting things about it is that intermittent reinforcement is much more effective than constant reinforcement. If you only reinforce someone occasionally when he does the behavior you want, he's going to keep doing it longer because he'll go through long periods of time without being rewarded and keep doing it because there's always a chance he'll get rewarded. Whereas if you reward him every time and then suddenly stop, then he'll say, oh, this isn't working anymore. Why bother doing it? So in the book, they're reinforced intermittently by food to behave the way the people running this experiment want them to behave.
You mentioned something interesting that you said, whether the reader realizes it or not, they'll come out of this reading the book with an understanding of conditioning. Do other books of yours wind up teaching the reader something without them maybe even knowing it?
That's my aim, you know, because if the book, if it's obvious to the reader that they're being didactically taught something, then it's not that much fun to read the book. Whereas if there's a plot, real situations, real characterization, real interaction between people, plus the scientific information, which I try to make accurate, then they'll read the book and they'll understand about it. Like The Last Universe is about quantum dynamics, which is, as I said, very hard to understand. But I think if they read this book, they'll get a real feeling for what it's all about.
I want to talk a little more about how you actually go about writing most of your books. Do you have a brainstorming session and pre-writing?
The first step is the research. I'll pick a subject that seems interesting to me and then read a lot of books about it. And when I've done enough research so that I feel I have some kind of understanding of the subject, I then do brainstorm. I pre-write. I sit down at the computer and write out everything I can think of, every dumb idea, no matter how stupid it seems. And I don't even bother printing it out, and I can do this for as much as 20 pages. And by the end of that, I will have the characters, their real-life problems, their sort of surrealistic problems, a vague outline of the plot, and then I can start writing chapter one. But I definitely pre-write. It invariably, when I'm actually writing the book, I diverge from the pre-writing because as I get into it, I know more about the story, more about the characters, and so I change. And, of course, the hardest part is the ending. It's very easy to start out a book with putting in lots of bizarre stuff. The hard part is to tie it all up at the end so that it makes sense. One book I wrote, I had to rewrite the ending about 20 times. But yes, I do pre-write a lot. And then, of course, rewriting, and this I emphasize with kids who hate to revise. They just hate. They write something and they want it to be carved in stone. And I make the point that I usually write a book about 5 times during the writing process before it's ready for publication. And that's one of the things about writing young adult books is that the editing is much more rigorous than adult books. And a lot of people don't seem to understand. Here's my message of the day. A lot of adults don't seem to understand that these young adult books are really good literature and really exciting to read. And they're a lot of them are a lot better done than adult books, where the author can just scribble down anything he wants and send it to the publisher and they'll just publish it. I'm not in that category. And I the editor helps me a lot and suggests changes. Now, I don't have to do everything the editor suggests if I don't agree with it, but a lot of times what the editor suggests helps me a lot. You need another eye. I mean, I know what I'm trying to say. I know what's in my own head. What I don't know is if it's really coming across to another person. And that is the function of the editor, to tell me, I don't really understand what you're trying to do here. And then I say, okay, well, I'll try to clarify it and make it work better.
You mentioned movies. I wanted to ask you if it seems like many of your books would wind up making very good movies. Has that ever been discussed?
They all would make wonderful, wonderful movies, of course. One of them, actually, it's probably my most popular best-selling book, is called Interstellar Pig. Sold to the movies about 5 years ago. They paid me a substantial amount of money. That was 5 years ago. They had a screenplay written, which left out the funniest stuff in the book. Of course, as the author, I didn't like the screenplay, but I had nothing to say about it because the agent says, your first movie, don't try to interfere, or they'll just drop it. Just let them make the movie. And then the sad but true fact is, whether or not they want to make another movie of your book depends on only one thing. Do I need to say what that one thing is? If it makes money, then they'll be interested. So they paid me for Interstellar Pig, but that was 5 years ago. And, you know, Hollywood's famous for, spending a lot of money and then never making the movie. And so far, that's the only... Then recently, there was a interest in a television series of The Boy Who Couldn't Die, which is about a kid who's a zombie living in Manhattan, which I think would make a good series. Haven't heard from them for a while after their initial interest. So I'm not depending on it. I've learned that I don't depend on this. It'd be great. I'd love it. But I just keep writing more books because that's the way I make money.
Well, I want to briefly talk about Interstellar Pig, which you just mentioned, and then I want to get back to some of your writing style and some of those things. Interstellar Pig, really interesting story about a boy who's on vacation with his parents and meets some strange neighbors, which aren't what they seem, and have a very interesting game. I was hoping maybe you could just give a brief kind of description of what that game is and what he runs into.
The neighbors play this game called Interstellar Pig, in which there's an object called the piggy, and the goal of the game is to be in possession of the piggy at the end. If you're not in possession of it, you and your entire planet and species will die. So there's a certain intensity to the game. And it's a board game, and they play it with this kid, but what he doesn't realize is that it's not a game. It's real. And I'm not the first person that wrote a book about a game that you think is a game and then turns out to be real. You know, kids love the book because it's about a game and because there's a lot of action in it and because these people who seem to be very attractive, well-built, gorgeous people, there's this woman who's just stunning, who turns in it out at the end to be a disguised, disgusting spider woman, and so on. And but there's also humor in it. There's these sapient, carnivorous lichen who eat everything they touch. That was the part that was missing from the screenplay, which I was quite upset about that, especially now that they can do anything in the movies. You know, there's nothing that you can't do. But since they're never going to make the movie, I'm not worried about it.
But one problem I always had when I tried to write something, I'd wind up writing a bit and then it just wouldn't go anywhere. It just was a half-finished product. Do you ever find yourself running into something like that?
That happened to me once with one book. I got to about page 60 and then couldn't continue anymore. Of course, I kept it, but mostly I do end up finishing the books. A lot of kids tell me that same thing that you just told me, that they have an idea, but they can't get beyond a certain point. I don't know what the secret is. One of the secrets is that my income depends on finishing the book. So I don't have much choice. I have to finish the book. And if I have to go back and change things at the beginning to make it workable, then I'll do that. But it's funny, the book I'm writing now, this was just about a week and a half ago, I was still in Thailand. One day I sat down to work, I came up with one page in the whole day. The next day I sat down to work, out comes 10 pages. So I don't know the reason for that. It's if it's your mood or if it's what it is. But I think this book, I'm going to knock on wood now. I think this new book has reached the point where it will get done. I think I know what's going to really happen in it.
I want to talk about another one of your books that I have not read, but you mentioned just a moment ago called The Boy Who Couldn't Die, about zombies. Now, I was wondering if you did... You say you do research a lot as part of the brainstorming process. Did you research zombies for this?
Well, that's an interesting question. What it started out, when I started it, I didn't even know it was going to be about zombies. I thought it was going to be about this kid who doesn't want it. His best friend gets killed, and he realizes he's mortal. So he finds someone who claims to be able to make it so that he can't. And he knows this myth. I think it's a Russian folktale about a monster that hides his spirit in an inaccessible place. And once his spirit is hidden, nobody can harm him. And the kid finds a woman who lives in Queens who claims to be able to do this. So she does it. And what he doesn't realize is that she has turned him into a zombie under her control. So I wrote this book. I didn't do any research. And I sent it, the draft, to my editor, and she liked it, and she sent back to me an adult nonfiction book written by a Harvard...
Is that Wade Davis?
Yes. Do you know the name of the book? The Peacock and the Rainbow or something like that. And he actually went to Haiti, and he studied the zombification process, and he found out exactly what drugs they use to do this to people. The way they knock them out and make them appear dead is this combination that includes pufferfish. Now, we all know that pufferfish are these little fish that, when they get scared, they get big, they blow up. And we also know that they're considered a huge delicacy by Japanese people, but that if you eat the wrong part or if it's not cooked correctly, you die. It's like culinary Russian roulette. And the Japanese are willing, they love this fish so much that they're willing to take the risk of eating it. So that's the great thing about the editor. People say, why do you let the editor tell you what and what not to write? Well, she sent me this whole book that made The Boy Who Couldn't Die much more scientifically accurate. And, of course, that makes the book better. And then there's this drug they have after you're apparently dead and buried that they dig you up and give you this other stuff. And that wakes you up, it makes you subservient. So all that is in the book from this book by this Harvard guy. And that's one of the things I love about my editor, is that she would do something like send me that book, which I didn't know about.
Well, I wanted to talk more in more general terms about writing for young adults and science fiction. Even a more general question than that, I guess, would be, why should teens read at all? Why do you think that's important?
Well, first of all, I think reading is the best entertainment there is. You know, we were talking before about how they can do almost anything in the world with special effects now, but they still can't do what you can imagine in your head while you're reading something. I also think that if they develop the habit of reading for pleasure, that they're going to have a better life, because they'll always have... I mean, I make these long, long flights to Asia all the time, and I see these people sitting on the airplane, just sitting there. And I think, how can they stand it? You know, I always have a book. And then, of course, the final thing, the more politically correct thing to say would be, if you can read, then you're going to know more about what's going on in the world. Although it's questionable whether newspapers are any more accurate than television news. I don't know, but I think you do get more different points of view. So I think in every way, reading, enjoying reading, is going to improve a person's life. And that's sort of my goal, is to write books that will get people of this age to feel that reading is really fun. And I get letters to brag a little bit, I get letters from kids who say they never finished a book. And then their teacher or librarian gave them one of my books, and they say, I read the whole book, and now I want to read your other books. And when I get a letter like that, I feel like I've succeeded. I'm not doing it for altruistic reasons completely. I mean, you know, I'm doing it because it's my job and I need to earn a living. But for instance, I have a friend who writes adult novels. She was a friend in college, and she once said to me, oh, it must be good practice writing children's books. And in a certain way, I think what I'm doing is more important than what she's doing, because she's writing for people who already have developed the habit of reading for pleasure. And what I'm doing is creating readers and showing them that, not telling them, but showing them, proving to them that reading is going to be is going to improve their life a lot.
This youth who had written you and wasn't able to put your book down, I think that's one of the best things about your books. How did you learn how to do that, if you did learn at all, or how do you go about actually writing that way?
I think the reason that I do it, that I can do it, is that that's the way I like to read. There are a lot of boring books that I would start and never finish. And I learned what it was about the books that I liked that kept me interested in them. I don't like 1,100-page books. I don't like a lot of padding. I don't like a lot of unnecessary stuff. I like the story to move along and have enough of what you need, but not too much. And that's what I like about writing young adult books, is that they're not full of this unnecessary padding. They're to the point. Now, one thing, of course, that has disproved that, not really disproved it, but the one example that's the opposite of that, of course, is the Harry Potter books, which are extremely long. But my books are generally around 200 pages long, and I think that's a good length for that age. And I find that's long enough for me to say as much as I want to say.
I noticed a lot of your books tend to be classified college-bound young adult.
One reason is the schools that I go to, the schools that are interested in bringing in a writer, are generally schools that emphasize reading and writing, and kids at those schools are more likely to be college-bound. But I also, a long time ago, got a letter or read an article by a woman who worked at a juvenile detention center. And she discovered that the kids at that center were passing around my books and reading them. And I thought that was extremely flattering. And in fact, when I go to Texas next week, I'll be speaking at a juvenile detention center. I'm really looking forward to it, because if those kids like my books, then I must be doing something right. And I can only hope that reading them will help them get over whatever problems they have. Because one of the things I tell kids, and this is in relation to the this whole thing that's happening now about kids, what was the first place where it happened? Columbine. Uh-huh. And now, you know, kids have learned from that, and other kids they have to have security at schools and so on. And I tell kids, when I talk to them, if you get really upset about something, write it down, and then you're less likely to do something stupid because of it. And I myself, when I have problems with certain people, I'll put them in a book and trash them. And it'll make me feel a whole lot better. And I can work out the problems that way by writing about it.
I wanted to ask about your experience here in Arizona. Arizona schools, have they proved to be any different than other schools around as far as the kids themselves?
The kids at the schools I've been to so far were all great. They were really into what I had to say, very responsive, got the jokes, had good questions about the books. And a lot of this has to do with the teachers. If the teachers have prepared them, if the teachers have read the books to them or had them read the books and so on. And so far, in my experience, that's what happens in Arizona. The schools I've been to are really good.
Well, that's something to be proud of. Unfortunately, we are out of time. Thank you for talking with us today. Good luck with your new book, The Last Universe, by science fiction for young adult author William Sleater.